Today we're going to talk about revision techniques, not just what to do or how to do it, but we're going to focus here on science-backed methods for effective information retention. Sounds like a big glamorous phrase, but basically what we're looking at here are ways to retain information more effectively. So this will be based around a whole host of different techniques and ideas and ways of applying embedded learning. So in other words, actually learning something for the first time and then figuring out how best for you personally to be able to then retain that information. So if you're looking to, as part of your course, if you're looking to retain information for revision purposes, then you're in the right place. If this is something for your professional development, so you're looking to retain over a long period of time, you're also in the right place. Daniel Willingham said that, and he was a prominent cognitive scientist, he said that memory is the residue of thought. In other words, it's very, very likely that even though you experience something, even though you think something, the residue of that thought is what is your memory. But that over time, and for a lot of us, not too distant time, is likely to erode and disappear or dissipate sort of quite readily. And for some of us who don't necessarily claim to have the very best memories, this can be a bit of an issue when it comes to retaining information that you're going to be assessed or tested on. So that's what we're going to focus on here, science-backed methods for retaining effectively the information that you're learning. So the top tips overall here, and I'll summarize these in a bit more detail towards the end of this talk, but the top tips in effect are to engage in active learning. So instead of passively reading stuff and just thinking it's going in, but actually engage with the material through questioning and summarizing. And I have a whole host of different ways that you can do that in just a minute. So be thinking here about being active in your learning, not just reading, watching, and listening, but actually actively questioning and summarizing, maybe playing back, maybe challenging, maybe trying to teach others, for example, the learning that you're going through. You can also use mnemonic devices, so techniques like acronyms, for example, can be very effective for many of us, or visual imagery, and this can also enhance memory if you're a visual learner. I myself are very fond of things like mind maps, and I can actually recall mind maps from many, many years ago that I created, and it's just purely because it's the visual stimulus that I can then build up over time. And for some people, it's checklists. But for others, they like acronyms because summarizing things down into very kind of bite-sized chunks can also work really well. So we're going to go deeper into some of these things as we go through this session. And another top tip really for effective information retention is to regularly test yourself. Some people will do self-quizzes. And again, this can really help to solidify learning and the information that you've already encountered and help to kind of reinforce it over time. Again, that can be a very sort of popular way of doing things. And again, with all of these things, some things will resonate with you. Some things you'll find very, very helpful. Other things, maybe not so. So this is very much a pick and mix approach and trying to find out what is going to resonate with you in terms of your preferences, but also your learning style as well. Now, this is always an interesting one. When you think about memory and actually retaining information, we're always reminded of the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve. And this kind of is a curve that really highlights the rapid decrease in memory retention over time. And also, really, in the counteracting that, the positive impact of spaced repetition. In other words, as naturally we forget things over time, and we will forget pretty much within the first day of hearing and learning something, we'll probably forget half of what we've just learned. This is according to the curve. And by 3 days, you've forgotten pretty much 80% of what you've just learned. Now, that is actually, if you think about that, quite frightening. It's just the way that we are stimulated day in, day out with lots of almost overstimulation of information. And we find this from loads of different sources, digital, physical, online, offline. We're just bombarded with information. And that's part of this forgetting curve. We have a finite capacity to retain information. So what can you do about that? Well, the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve really introduces the whole idea of spaced repetition. In other words, if you learn something on the knowledge that half of that within a day will be gone, if you could, for example, towards the end of that day, that end of that 24-hour period, you could maybe just do a little refresher, for example, and maybe after 2 days, another little refresher, because by 2 days, you're down to only a third of the information is going to be retained. So what about that other two-thirds? Could you top it up? So when we do revision, a lot of people will say, oh, no, I did my revision last week and that's kind of it. I'm done. I'm ready to go. On the understanding that actually, or forgetting the understanding that actually it's going to mostly be gone by the time you get to the test. So little and often, once you've done the bulk of the revision, little and often top-ups can often be a really, really good kind of game changer for actually how much physically you can retain. So that's the first thing. Do bulk of activity, but then make sure that spaced repetition, little top-ups, if you like, because that will reinforce this drop-off and that will reinforce the fact that the things that would otherwise disappear are actually standing some kind of chance of being retained. I mentioned at the start of this talk that for me, something visual really, really works. And for a lot of us, that can actually help us master very complex topics. And if you master mind mapping, particularly if the topic is really quite detailed, if there's a lot of kind of factual information, or if there's information that you can cluster, then mind mapping can be applied really effectively. And in fact, actually to every aspect of life, where improved learning and clear thinking is going to enhance your performance. That's from Tony Buzan, who was the actual inventor of the concept of mind mapping. So think of mind mapping as really starting with a central idea. I've got a little visual for you in just a second, but think of it as starting with a central idea. So maybe the topic area that you're looking to retain in your revision. And then think about actually how then things might spin off from that core topic or core concept that is at the center of your, or in effect, your central idea on this particular subject. You can then use keywords and images to enhance your memory by stimulating some creative thinking. So in other words, if you have this key concept at the middle, which in theory should be quite easy to retain in your memory, and then just by seeing that and seeing that key concept or phrase or word, you then can remember the next level out. And then by drawing that next level out, you can then remember the next level out beyond that. So you start to see this thing, and this is why it's called a mind map. You start to see it mapping out those synapse connections in your memory and actually then visually seeing that actually on the page. And to make it easier to retain this, particularly as you get further away from that central core, using different colors, for example, for different branches, for different subtopics can actually aid in the categorization of this other material and actually then the way that you can recall it. So this whole kind of mind mapping concept is based around having a central idea. Okay, so you've got to decide when you're doing your revision, at what level do I want my central idea to be? So if, for example, in marketing, you could say, well, my central idea here is market research, for example. So you put market research right at the center of your mind map. And then from that, having seen market research, it then spins off into the different types of research. So maybe primary research and secondary research at the next level. And then maybe you color code those. And then beyond that, it's okay, qualitative, quantitative, and you could have desk research and you could have white papers and you could have, you know, commissioning a research agency. And then you kind of see the next levels kind of spinning out from those. And then maybe further out from that, you start to put some examples for your organization or your sector. So you're starting to see this proliferation of ideas, of thinking materialize in front of you. And then as you study this visually, the synapse connections in your brain will start to form based around the image that you've created. And it can be a super powerful way of actually keeping on track with your learning, as well as actually building new and more innovative ideas for existing concepts. But the key to mind mapping, and this is one thing that a lot of people forget when they use mind mapping for revision purposes, is that the central idea is core, because you have to be able to remember that central idea and that first layer of spin-off concepts or ideas or topics, because then that drives the rest of the mind map if you start to recall it, maybe within an exam setting. So it's a really powerful tool, but remember to go for that central core idea before you begin anything else, and then you'll be off to a really, really strong start. Now, I talked about spaced repetition as being something that is really, really a strong scientific-based way to retain information. And the reason is this is effective is because it's evidence-based. And this is the evidence-based approach to learning. Spaced repetition, and you can be using things for, like, particularly flashcards, for example. And these are ideal for spaced repetition, and especially for kind of, you know, learning acronyms and learning the key concepts within the topics that you're looking to retain in your revision. So flashcards are part of this whole spaced repetition. So you don't create a flashcard and use it once and think, hey, I've revised. Flashcards are for this constant spaced repetition after you've done your main bulk of learning. So you've done the learning, you've done some deep revision, and then you use the flashcards as spaced repetition all the way through to the point where you're going to be assessed. And the way you do that is to set some regular intervals through which you are going to do this spaced repetition. So you're going to be using things like your flashcards, reviewing the material at increasing time intervals. So for the first time, you're probably going to be doing it, you know, the next day. We've seen the curve, the Ebbinghaus curve instructs us that, you know, the very next day that we've revised something, we need to do that little fresh top up. So get those flashcards out on that day one, 24 hours after you've done your revision for that particular topic. So maybe you've created a mind map too, but get it out and revisit it, because that's the key one. And then the next spaced repetition point is probably 2 or 3 days later. So you do it again. And then maybe the next point is maybe 5 or 6 days later. So it isn't every single day. We've seen the curve. The rate of decay obviously gets to a point where, you know, you've probably forgotten the information after about a week. But if you do this spaced repetition, you're able to retain 70, 80, even 90% of the information by doing this increasing time interval spaced repetition. So day one, you learn it. After the start of day two, you do that top up, then it's day three probably, and then it's day 5 or 6. So 7 to 10 days later, you still have a high level of information retention. But you can obviously adjust those intervals based on how difficult you find that material. Because, of course, if you find something particularly tricky, and again, putting this into a marketing context, a lot of people say market research or pricing or budgeting, you know, if those are key concepts that you find, and statistically, I would say those probably are the ones that I see, you know, most people find a little bit more difficult, then you would actually review harder material more frequently. So maybe you halve the spaced repetition. So you do the learning, you do that first revision concept, and then maybe day one, day three, day five, maybe, and then day six. And so you've kind of almost added in an extra repetition just to keep it fresh, just to keep it moving. So that's really important. So if flashcards, and for a lot of you listening to this, you will be using flashcards because it is a very, very popular way of learning. You can use the Linkner system here. And this is all about kind of using the flashcards, that not all flashcards have an equal level of importance to you. Some cards that you find are a little bit easier than others, then you can review those, you know, at a much, much faster rate. So you can kind of, every time you get them, you move them then into the next pile and you say, yeah, I got that one. Absolutely got that right. Turn it over. Yeah, I'm fine with that one. So you put it into the next pile. If there's a card that you encounter and you think, oh, I'm not really, really confident with that one, or I'm struggling a little bit with that one, it either stays in that pile, or if you're deeper into the number of repetitions, maybe you're on the third repetition of this flashcard exercise, if you're still struggling with it, it then goes back a previous pile. So what you're doing is you're actually fast tracking through the things that you find more simple. Now, this isn't just about saying, hey, I've got it, I've done it. It's actually doing this in a more systematic, scientific way, because these cards that you're finding easier, so the more familiar topics, and that could be, I don't know, customer profiling, or it could be the steps for running an advertising campaign, or whatever it is that you find a little bit more straightforward. It doesn't mean you're not going to revise those. It doesn't mean that those flashcards are not important. What it means is they fast track through to the end, so that they're fine, they're done. So you review those at a much faster rate. The ones that you find trickier, they get to appear on your radar much more frequently. So you'll go back and revisit those. And so this Leitner system is just a very simple way of moving things forward or backwards at a rate that reflects how comfortable you are, how confident you are that you've actually retained and learned that information. And of course, ultimately, what you want is everything in that final pack, you know, in that final pile just before you go into the assessment. So ideally, that would be the ultimate rate. But of course, as we know, you probably don't need to know everything at the same level anyway. So just be quite selective. If there are particular topics that you're finding just too hard to do, they just do not resonate with you, then maybe it's time to just physically park those, because if you've tried a number of times, they possibly aren't going to work anyway. And what you don't want to be doing is dragging yourself down by the things you're finding hard. You've got to play to your strengths. And that's why we try and fast track through the things that you're confident in, because that is the feel-good factor in revision. You don't want to be just always focusing on, I can't remember this, I can't remember that. Those things need more attention, but they shouldn't dominate and overshadow the stuff that you're good at. Because of course, you need to emerge from the revision process in a really positive way. And another thing you can do to create this kind of positive environment as well is to create a conducive study environment. In other words, your environment will influence your productivity and the quality of your work. We know that. It's common sense. It's not rocket science. But when you're doing revision, be it with cards or mind maps or other techniques, and we've got a few more to go through in a minute, you need to be minimizing distractions. And this is all about getting some quality time in the environment that's going to suit you. And for most of us, it isn't about being in a busy place. It is a quiet, clutter-free area. So if you're normally working in quite a chaotic kind of environment, that is not going to be helpful to you. And I'll share with you the science behind this in a minute as to why this is actually true, irrespective of your learning style. So make sure you choose a quiet, clutter-free area, because you need to be able to focus, relax into the space to be able to make this stuff happen. You also need to ensure comfort. So it's got to be adequately lighted. So, you know, you need to make sure that it's appropriate for you. Some people prefer a better lit environment. Other people prefer to kind of relax into a more sort of ambient lighting. But certainly having comfortable chair, proper desk setup, something that just kind of, you know, gets you into the physical space appropriately. That is really, really important. And making sure as well that in that space you have all of the necessary resources. And that does not include... Okay. It does not include access to Teams. It does not include just a little glance towards your email. This is about focused quality time with you and the materials. That is absolutely critical, because if you don't do that, the distraction will knock you out of sync, and no amount of flashcards or mind maps is going to get you back into the flow. So this is about creating a conducive study environment that allows you to flow. Now, there is a huge amount of science and research around this, and it is all about kind of matching, if you like, the amount of sort of, you know, influence that you're going to get from the materials that you're going to be looking at and studying with the need you have to retain the information. And there is a what we call a taxonomy. I struggle to say the word there. It's Bloom's taxonomy, which is all about the way that you're going to be thinking within this environment with the tools and the information that you have available to you. Now, you have a choice here based on the type of information you're looking to revise. Now, bear with me on the science on this one because it's really quite important. Not every topic, and again, we'll stick to marketing here, not every topic in marketing that you're going to be revising is of the same strategic and thinking level. Okay, so some topics are going to have higher order levels of thinking for you to both understand them, but also retain them. Other stuff has lower order thinking skills. So the lower order stuff is kind of the factual stuff. It could be, you know, grabbing the just the basic understanding and meaning of particular items or particular concepts or particular techniques. The lower skills, again, are applying things, you know, so actually putting stuff into maybe a case study or an example of a project or a campaign or an exercise that you've done. That's lower level thinking, okay, because it is just about really retention and recall. The higher level thinking are things like analyzing. So taking apart and really kind of going deep into the relationships between things. So that could be between a campaign and the performance. It could be between a particular customer and then the supply chain that serves that customer. So deep analyzing of information and relationships between things is a higher level thinking. Higher than that is evaluation. So making judgments around the information that you're presented with. So turning information into intelligence is a phrase that I often use for this one. And probably the highest level thinking is using information to create something new. Now, when you look at these various kind of cognitive levels, so cognition is all about the thinking that's going on in your brain. The best way of using this conducive study environment is to balance, as you go through your revision, different levels of thinking. So don't always just think, hey, I'm here to learn rote fashion, just facts and acronyms and case studies and examples. That's lower level thinking. You will find yourself just mind numb if you just do that. So break up your revision between lower level thinking. So learn some facts, get some acronyms under your belt, you know, start to recall some of those projects that you've done, but balance that off with some evaluation. So go and look deep into things and try and figure out why is that? I'd never really thought about that before. Why does that thing relate to that? Or, you know, let me go and just sort of do some deep dive into this particular set of data. Is there anything in there? There's some clues of what we could do differently. And so think about your revision sessions, not just about learning numbers and facts, but actually balancing that kind of learning with being a little bit more creative, a little bit more analysis, a little bit more evaluation. And if you can strike that balance, and you will find that the amount of information you retain, but also the enjoyment you get out of the process will be significantly improved. It's quite a fundamental process that our brains are going through here. And so balancing higher order and lower order thinking skills throughout a particular revision session will keep you engaged, will keep you focused, and will actually then help in the retention itself. Now, one of the questions then will be, well, okay, but how long should I spend doing this? Because actually, you know, what you've done is you've just added a whole bunch of other stuff into this session. I was only planning to spend an hour. Well, okay, but you might need to be spending a little bit more. So your revision session might be a little bit longer. So what we need to factor in here, and particularly if you are quite low attention on this spectrum of attention, you might have quite a low attention level, then the role of nutrition and rest and breaks is going to be absolutely critical in revision success. I know people, and there's some people in my world quite close to me, who will spend, well, it feels like a whole day without breaks, without kind of, you know, just getting away from it, without, you know, physically stretching or whatever, without actually some proper nutrition, thinking that they are absolutely nailing their revision. Now, the science behind this would say you're not. Okay, so nutrition is absolutely important, if not critical, for learning and memory because it helps increase the cognitive function that we were talking about just before in that taxonomy. So you know, neuroscientists have given us a lot of guidance in the research that they do over the years. So eating brain-boosting foods as you, you know, work through your revision sessions is absolutely key here, because this is actually helping your mind and your brain to focus in with the physicality of revision along with the actual topic. So it's as much about you and your preparation and the environment as it is the actual things that you're learning. So eat brain-boosting foods, things that include omega-3 fatty acids, so whole grains, things that are really, really good in antioxidants. So, you know, fresh vegetables, for example, fruits, things that are kind of natural can be really, really strong for brain boosting. And actually maintaining hydration. We all know this one. This one has been, you know, really drilled home to us over recent years. Maintaining good levels of hydration, that is crucial for cognitive function. And that doesn't mean that you're sat there, you know, drinking coffee all the time. Yes, okay, the stimulants of caffeine, I know, because I drink quite a bit of coffee, only good coffee, of course. But it, you know, it kind of, that is not going to maintain hydration. We are talking, you know, we're talking water here. We're talking, you know, filtered water to get proper hydration, because that balanced with brain boosting foods will keep you on point and focused throughout the sessions. And also prioritizing adequate rest. Now, I'm not going to go a huge sort of amount into this, but it is really important to consider, you know, both prioritizing quality sleep, and this is nighttime sleep, around those revision days or periods that you have, even if it means you miss out on other stuff. And a lot, there's a lot of research that talks about the quality of sleep through revision periods is actually way more important than going out and socializing or going off and doing exercise. Sleep is going to be your best friend in this particular process. It could be nighttime sleep that we're talking about here. And that will obviously, that will enhance the consolidation of the memory because of the brain function that happens when you're sleeping. You know, things just align themselves. You know this through your dreaming and through, you know, reflection when things from a day or two ago pop into your dreams. That is your brain doing exactly this. So we know that from a practical sense. This is kind of how it works. But what we could also be talking about, particularly if you want to dedicate in this lovely conducive environment with all the right food, you know, and all these techniques, if you want to be studying, for example, for a day, then what you could be thinking then is about napping. So taking short little naps. So maybe you get up, you stretch, you go for a little walk around the park, around the garden, and then you come in and you have a short nap. And that should be just a series of minutes. Okay, we're not talking 30 minutes, 40 minutes. You do not want to actually fall asleep as such. You don't want deep sleep. You want shallow sleep. So a little nap, and then you set your phone alarm to just wake you up in about 12 minutes. It's probably about the optimum. Again, do your research to find out what works for you. But that kind of period of time will then get you back started and refreshed, ready to go again. So there's a load of things that you can research to find the balance between diet, emotional well-being, cognitive performance, loads and loads of resources. One that I found, which was very, very interesting from the macgroup.org.uk, is the Good Mood Food Triangle, which is the food mood performance triangle that they talk about. And basically, everything then is driven by the nutrition and the choices that you make, reducing stresses, you know, just having great sleep patterns, just really kind of getting a sense of groundedness and control within the revision times or the study periods that you have. So go away and do your own research in terms of finding something that works for you. But just know the research is out there and it's very, very important. You cannot overdo your revision and expect to succeed. You tie yourself out through revision and study and you're lost before you actually begin. So get, you know, really, really balanced and controlled with that. Super important. So we talked about flashcards, we've looked at mind maps, we've started to think about some of the ways that you can do this. And of course, there will be technologies that can help you. I'm going to talk in a minute a little bit about AI, because AI comes into the mix now. But if we look at the more kind of traditional sort of digital tools and apps that can enhance your revision, there are many, many technologies out there that will basically sort of, you know, as it were, give you the wings that allow you to fly faster and further than ever before. So what you're needing to be doing here is kind of, you know, leverage educational apps. You can look in the app store and find those apps that give you the kind of the digital flashcards. There is mind mapping. There are ways and multitude of different ways that you can note take. You know, there's a whole bunch of ways that you can be producing little sort of sticky notes, as it were, as you kind of go around your everyday living and just kind of test yourself and just kind of do it. So it's just got a constant reflection. It literally is there in the palm of your hand. From online resources, of course, things like educational videos, podcasts, interactive quizzes. If you're doing an apprenticeship, there are lots of self-quizzes and tests in the Learning Hub. But you can go online as well and get a different flavor of stuff. There's always something out there that can just test your knowledge in a new and fresh way. And stay organized with digital planners, tracking your study schedule and deadlines, making sure that you've got everything kind of planned in, even if planning is not your thing. If you're much more about spontaneous living, this might be a time to just think, well, okay, maybe I just need to book in some quality time here. Maybe I just need to kind of decide which topics I'm going to learn and study and when, so that you don't overload, so that you don't become too spontaneous and get carried away with a particular area. You're working to a plan. And again, I think you'll find that the research will back up that as being a really strong way of doing things. So get the tools and apps around you to really help you do that. And the reason that we're kind of doing this is what we're looking to do, really, the SAMA model, which is about substitution, augmentation, modification, redefinition. It's basically a framework that kind of builds the whole idea of using different types of technology for different reasons. So what we're doing here is we're saying, okay, certain technologies, certain apps, certain sort of online resources will have different functions. So there is no one size fits all. There is no one particular app that's going to do everything for you. So it is about a pick and mix approach. So if you want something for planning, great. If you want something to test you, great. If you want something for recognition and reflection, great. If you want something to just, control when you need to be taking your breaks, and I've got a little tool for that in just a minute, then great. So it is about experimentation. You will not get this necessarily right the first time, but planning ahead in terms of the resources available is probably worth doing before you start the revision process. And again, this is part of creating the right kind of environment around you. Now, the reason this is so important is to do this planning is because you're going to need to do some prioritization. Not all subjects are equal in terms of importance or difficulty. Okay, we know that, don't we? I mean, if you just think about your day-to-day activities, you know that you prioritize the stuff that's important and urgent. Well, the same kind of thing happens in revision. So start to prioritize, assess the importance and difficulty of stuff. Give priority to topics that are important and challenging. It is about balance. Get some quick wins in. Yeah, absolutely. But if there's some stuff that you know is important, make sure that you spend time on subjects that require maybe a deeper understanding. Allocate some time accordingly for those things. Not all time is equal. Not all topics are equal. And as I say, play to your strengths, not just giving time to the things that you find most hard. What we're talking about here is the things you find most important in the storytelling that you're looking to do through the assessment that you've got coming. And of course, within this whole mix of prioritization, you can review past exams. For a lot of us, there will be past papers or past briefs that we can actually refer to, and then focus on topics most frequently covered. There's a lot of stuff online about, particular topics and their frequency, and often they come up with particular assessing bodies or organizations. So you can do your research and find out for specifically what you need, or speak to your tutor about that, because there will be patterns that are most likely to happen. It doesn't mean it's guaranteed, but we're talking prioritization here. We're not talking exclusion of things that don't normally come up, because of course you could be examined on the whole syllabus. So that's the thing to remember. But it's really important to know that time is valuable. You are never going to get this revision time back again. So making sure that you're using things, maybe like the Eisenhower matrix, to prioritize the tasks based on urgency and importance. If they're urgent to do because you need them for the first test, not the third test, and if they're really important because you know that these things have got consequences if you don't do them first, then that's in the top left-hand box, which is the urgent important. If it's not so urgent because you don't need it for the first test, but you might need it a little bit later, but it's still important, then you can schedule that into the plan. You can basically get rid of stuff really that's not important, but it's urgent, because you can push that right to the end of the process, if you like, and say, well, okay, if I have the time to do it, then that's what I'm going to do. But I'm only going to do it when I've actually got the important stuff out of the way first, because this one isn't important. It's pretty urgent, because it might occur in this first test, but actually it's not so important because I know that I'm playing to my strengths and this one's just too hard. And then, of course, the final one is the thing that you're just not going to touch, which is the stuff that you really don't understand. It's never really come up in the past papers. You just aren't going to back anything that is going to appear. And even if it does, well, you've got enough strength in your strengths to not really worry about it. Then just leave those. Okay, so what I would suggest if you've got a syllabus is to put into each of one of these four boxes all the elements in your syllabus, because this will allow you to prioritize. The Eisenhower matrix is just such a simple concept, but super powerful when it comes to just the recognition that you cannot do everything here. So you'll be playing to your strengths, but you'll be doing it in a timely way as well. So that's really important. And then, of course, it's all about getting started, because at the moment, we're just kind of setting the scene here. We're just kind of getting things started. But what happens if actually you sit there in your beautifully conducive environment with your lovely fresh food next to you? You feel all refreshed because you had a good night's sleep. You've done your prioritization. You've got your schedule. And you just sit there procrastinating. Well, the poet Edward Young once said, procrastination is the thief of time. Basically, the bottom line is you've got to get over yourself really fast, because you're not going to get this time back. And you know there's a deadline here. You know, you wouldn't be revising for something if there wasn't a deadline. And the deadline is when you're going to be assessed. So get to it. Set small and achievable goals and break down the tasks to overcome the feeling of overwhelm, because particularly early on in the journey, it's going to feel like a lot of stuff. So what you're going to need to do is say, right, okay, I'm going to get some quick wins. And this is why I keep saying maybe get out of the way the stuff that you know. So if you're looking at your flashcards, quick scan through the flashcards. Oh, I know that one. Turn it over. Yep, I've got that one. Bang. Then you're out of procrastination because you're off the mark. Okay, so this is all about being at the starting line and making that first step. You can also use things like time management techniques, like the Pomodoro technique. And I'm going to show you that in just a second, because that will help you to maintain that focus. This is a little bit like running a marathon, where, you know, you can get to the wall and you kind of feel, oh, just can't go on. I'm far enough away from the starting line, but I just can't see myself through this. Then it is about using time management techniques to stay focused and on track. And of course, all of this stuff actually serves us well, not just in revision time, but also actually in everyday life. So it's really useful. So the Pomodoro technique, this works really effectively if you can break your work down into set intervals. Now, typically, these are, according to the technique, around 25 minutes in length, separated by short breaks. So you take a task, single topic, and you focus on it. And you set a timer, and you work on that particular task, or you do the revision on that particular topic, create the mind map, build your flashcards for continuous 25 minutes. Then you take a 5-minute break. Now, whether you've finished or not is irrelevant. You take a 5-minute break after that 25-minute alarm goes off. You have to do that. As soon as you start saying, oh, well, I'll just go. No, you've lost it. You're not doing the technique. It's really important. This is all about time management. Okay, so if you come in early, you can start the next task. If you come in a little bit late, well, in the next round, because you're going to repeat this 25 minutes on, 5 minutes break for 4 rounds. And then at the end of those 4 rounds, you're going to take a longer break for 30 minutes. Maybe have that little power nap, maybe get something to eat, maybe go for the walk, and then you're going to repeat again. You will be amazed using the Pomodoro technique, both how much you get, you know, consumed in your revision, but also, interestingly, just how fast time seems to pass. But it's productive time. This chunking of time in regular time slots, and the timing is the key, not the completion of the topics. Okay, that's the really important bit. You can let a single topic bleed over into the next 25-minute block if you need to, but you must, according to the theory, according to the research, take those 5-minute breaks. And then every fourth 25-minute block, you take that longer break, and then you repeat. So try that one. It is really, really powerful. You can't not be affected by it. It just works. I wish I'd come up with this myself. It's a genius. Very, very simple, but it's a genius approach. Now, depending on the topics you're studying or depending on your attention span, you can play with those timings. So it might not be 25, it could be 15 minutes, and then you want a 4-minute break, for example. Play around with it until you find that sweet spot of what works for you. But it's this repetition of working, break that works. Okay, so you've got the general balance here, but just make sure that it works for you. And as part of that, you aren't necessarily going to be working just in isolation. You can take the benefit of actually doing some more interactive revision. So I did say, you know, switch off Teams, switch off your email, etc. But it might be that you actually want to collaborate and discuss topics with your peers, with, you know, other students on your course or with colleagues at work. This is not so that you can get other things bleeding into your time. This is a really revision-focused thing. But teaching itself, if you want to explain concepts to others to solidify your own learning and maybe simulate real life scenarios for some more practical subjects by role play, etc. Teaching is the highest form of understanding. And that goes back thousands of years. Aristotle first said that teaching is the highest form of understanding. If you can teach somebody what you've just revised and remembered, it's going to embed it. This is when we call embedded learning at its highest level. This is real embedded learning, because to be able to teach, you have to be able to understand it. You have to be able to convey it and communicate it. And what better way of getting the confidence that, yep, this is really sunk in. Of course, then you're going to do your spaced intervals later, so tomorrow and the day after. But just for now, knowing it's sunk in is super, super powerful. So that's a really, really positive way of doing it. And collaborative learning theory will emphasize that learning through group interaction can be a really, really powerful thing. And the reason, mostly because of this, and you'll see again if you research this, there's a lot of research and science behind this one, is that the kind of peer-to-peer teaching takes us on to a whole different level of understanding. It really emphasizes the way that this kind of process is, or the way it's processed within our brain. It's kind of, if we're doing this stuff by ourselves, it feels like there's a few stones that are left unturned. It feels like we haven't quite completed the circle, as it were. But if we can take that knowledge and that information, and maybe even without notes, convey it to somebody else, then that educational kind of two-way communicative flow of that knowledge and that information is a great way of actually giving us the confidence that, hey, we're there, we've got it, but also giving the other person maybe a slightly different flavor and different perspective on that same topic. So if you are the recipient of somebody else doing it back to you, it might be that that topic that you found that little bit tricky, oh, well, now you explain it like that, I understand it. And suddenly you get a light bulb moment. So the community of inquiries, we call it, can come up with lots of different ways, innovations, and just different ways of viewing the same topic. So if peer-to-peer collaborative learning is for you, you're not alone. There will be people who will be looking to do that with you as well. And as you're building all this together, you are on a journey. You can kind of see by now that, you know, revision techniques pull together the tools, the approaches, just the great mindset, the good environment and everything else set up around you. It is about actually customizing it for optimal results. So a plan is what a schedule is when. A plan is what a schedule is when. In other words, actually taking both a plan and a schedule together, you're going to get things done. So personalizing your schedule, so considering your most productive times and your personal commitments, so putting the right kind of revision time, the right kinds of topics into the right moments of the day. If you're a morning person, or if you're an evening person, making the most of those times. Don't try and force a square peg into a round hole. Use the times when you know you're most productive. If you get that lull after lunch, for example, then don't be using it for revision, because your brain is going to fall asleep. So just get out and do something else, do something different. Or maybe that's the teaching period, because that will keep you awake and keep you focused, because you're presenting to somebody else, or you're informing somebody else. And then maybe you keep the lower Sort of times in terms of demand on you for the times when, you know, sort of you have a little bit more kind of energy. So you can play and sort of adapt this as you go, because this will help you to prevent the burnout and maintain balance, particularly through a longer revision period. That's really, really important. And the adaptation of this as you go, you will learn a lot about yourself. If you were to take all of these things on the next time you need to go through a revision period, you'll find that actually as you progress, things are really, really interesting and they become very sort of different, if you like, to, you know, kind of the way that you might have done this stuff before. It gets really, really interesting. So what you can do here is you can adapt. You can adapt the timetable. You can adapt the topics. You can move things around in your Eisenhower matrix as you go. It's really important to remember that this is all about continuous improvement as you go through this process. And because we're doing this in kind of a very structured way, then some kind of time blocking technique is going to be applied here. So just think about allocating specific blocks of time to different topics for different levels of interest that you have, for different preferences, for different study styles, for different revision styles at different points in the day, at different points in the week. Spend some quality time going deep into this, because again, this will make your journey much more enjoyable. And it'll also avoid that procrastination or that fear that, oh my goodness, I have so much to revise. I don't know where to begin. That kind of wall of, you know, chaos that you can see without this is going to be a real drag on you. But as soon as you start blocking it out, you can also see the gaps, which is also a lovely refresher, because you can look at it and think, wow, that's interesting. That's helpful. I mean, I've got that little period of time there. Well, I'm actually going to go do some sport then, or I'm going to go shopping at that point. So you can really get yourself away from it. It gives you the control. So if you go to smartsheet.com/content/time-blocking-template, there's a really lovely little template there that will help you to at least start to build, you know, probably a color-coded version of this, which will allow you to allocate the right kind of time for the right topics with the right people in the right place in the right days of your very, very probably already very, very hectic and busy week. Now, the final thing I wanted to share with you was kind of this emerging tool or example that we have within revision, which is actually using AI. So, you know, as we know, artificial intelligence is pretty much everywhere right now. So we're using it to create content. We're using it to decide what we're going to eat for our dinner in the evening based on the ingredients that we've got in the cupboard. But we can also use it for revision. There are many emerging now AI-powered study tools. There are platforms like AI tutors, and there are chatbots that can provide you with a personalized assistance and explanations of the things that you want to be understanding, and maybe using something like ChatGPT to be engaging on a particular topic to get the AI to kind of test you, for example, to, you know, give you some kind of revision tracking ideas, or maybe analyze your progress and how you're performing. Maybe it can actually give you a little self-test, and you say, look, I'm actually going to create a new chat with ChatGPT and say, ChatGPT, can you send me 5 sort of quite easy questions on, well, let's say marketing planning. Okay, give me 5 easy questions on marketing planning. And as you get those right, you can say, okay, now up the ante, please, ChatGPT. Make this difficult. Make this for a marketing manager. Give me 5 questions based around this. And then it gives you those. And once you've encountered those, you say, okay, for a strategic marketing director, C-suite marketing director, give me 5 really, really difficult, challenging marketing planning questions and see how far you can get. You know, it will be able to give you standard answers so you can cross-check and cross-reference. And of course, because this is, you know, AI machine learning, it can be basically drawing from particular sectors. It can be drawing from, you know, sort of particular levels. It can give you what you need. So this is all about using AI to personalize your revision. So get creative and think about how you can sort of really use this to maximize both the effectivity of your work, but also the enjoyment as well. So you can be using things like Luna, If you go to boostededucation.com/Luna, you'll see an app in here, which gives you a lot of kind of resources and assets that can help you to customize your learning content based on your individual performance. So as you get better and better at learning and sharing and revising and studying and being able to train on these particular topics that you're studying and revising, the adaptation that the AI will do around that will come along on that journey with you. So what you were doing in week one of your studies could be very different to what you do literally the day before you're going to be assessed. And of course, the AI can go on that journey with you. So just be talking to it almost as this kind of sort of revision tutor, if you like, working by you, hand in hand, by your side as you go through your journey. So there are a lot of platforms out there now that are emerging in this space. So go do the research, find out something that really works for you and experiment. And again, of course, all the things that you're learning here, you can say, well, Neil, couldn't I use that for my marketing and my activities going forward, not just for revision? And of course, the answer is obviously, yes, you can. So all the things that we're talking about here are very much things you can use in your continuing professional development. So whilst we've focused in here on revision techniques, this is actually something that you can sort of be using, you know, in the long term. So once you've established these techniques and found things that kind of go and work alongside the preferences that you have for how you consume and then, you know, revisit and then share information and communication, it's going to apply to your day-to-day job as well. So it really is a win-win-win. So my final kind of big three tips really for the most effective revision that you can do is to embrace technology and innovation. So it is to use these digital tools and apps and of course AI that we were just talking about here to enhance the revision process. Get it to personalize it to you. Be interact with it. Think of more engaging ways to learn. It isn't just about rereading that textbook or just rewatching the stuff that you've already done. Start to really kind of stretch the boundaries of what's possible here, and you'll have some fun with it. Be very conscious of your learning style. What would work for you will be different to what will work for me. So start to tailor your revision techniques as you go and as you learn more about yourself to your individual learning style, whether it's visual, auditory, kinesthetic, or reading and writing. You know, I've given you lots of ideas to play with here, but some of these things will resonate more than others. So figure it out as you go through this. And again, this is an ongoing process, as we've just said. But overall, though, of course, as we know, and it just, you know, kind of is a little reminder here, the final piece, of course, is that balance is key. You know, when you're focusing on your revision, don't forget the importance of a balanced approach, proper nutrition, proper rest, and time as well to just get away from it. You know, revision and studying can be a really, really hard journey at times. So make time for relaxation and hobbies. Give yourself the permission to do it. It is part of it. It is not that you're skiving off and trying to get away from it. It is the essential element for getting this thing right, because this balance is absolutely crucial for maintaining your motivation, but also your mental well-being and that higher level cognitive performance that we were talking about. So have a great time when you start to pull together your revision plans, and hopefully some of these techniques and ideas and thinking will be useful for you. I wish you every success wherever you're kind of taking these techniques, if it's into the next exam or you're just going to use this to kind of, you know, sort of source a good continuous professional development process, whichever way you're doing it. I wish you every success. You know, some of these techniques could be lifelong friends of yours, but get creative, get innovative, and make it very, very personal to you. One size does definitely not fit all in revision techniques. So you won't be using everything, but hopefully some of these things will be a huge value to you. So good luck and enjoy.